Welcome to What's Your Story, where we, Jamie Marco
and Stan Brown,
delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Listen in as we uncover the unique tales that shape who we are,
one story at a time.
Hey, let's get ready to explore today's story.
Let's do it. Hi, Dad. Do you want to toast to our shakes today?
Hold on a second.
Here we go.
Shake your booty.
There we go. So we are listener. Hello. Welcome. I got some flack for eating during an episode from you, but you know what? Like, we do this when we can do these, and it's really about getting at people's stories and talking to people's stories.
But if you're eating and the other person's not eating, it's just, you know, it shouldn't be. But I thank you. At least you have your shake now, which is good.
Yes, we're having.
She listens sometimes.
Well, you have chocolate and I have vanilla. So do you always have chocolate shakes?
Either chocolate or vanilla. Oh. Depends how I feel.
Very fascinating for our listener, I'm sure, about the fact that we're talking about shakes.
We could do an entire segment on shakes.
We could. It could be like shake.
Let's get to the matter at hand. What is the matter at hand?
What's the matter with you? By the way, so months back, because this is airing later on, you had some surgery done on your face to remove some skin cancer. And your surgeon, can I touch it?
Yeah, sure.
Is it still swollen right there? Is that inside?
Yeah, the eyelid's a little bit puffy because that'll cut into the lower eyelid.
Is that an inside, like, I'm feeling a puffy there. Is that a stitch inside?
Yeah, sure.
He did an excellent job.
I appreciate that.
He's almost like an artist.
I was an excellent patient. He's an ocular plastic surgeon.
But I would say that he's somewhat an artist.
He's so good, you may want to have surgery. Even if you don't have a problem, just go to him. He'll cut something out.
No, but I think that he did a good job. And that's kind of scary thinking about, you know, when you're going in to see a surgeon, what's happening, what are they doing? And there is a type of artwork that you're working on and figuring out.
The key is to find the right particular niche category.
Right.
He wasn't just plastic. He wasn't just dermatology. He was an oculoplastic surgeon.
Ocular being for the eye.
Yes.
Got it. Well, today, as we talk about artwork and we talk about being an artist, we actually have an artist that we're speaking with today on the podcast.
How coincidental.
I know, right? Do you see how I like pull those together? I'm pretty talented like that. No, just kidding. But it's really interesting is that like it just goes to show you that you never know somebody's story. So as you know, I picked up going to Pilates about 6 months ago, going early in the morning and getting there first thing. And I go to classes like anywhere between 6 a.m. to 6:30 a.m. because that is the only time that I actually can actually get a workout in. And it's interesting. So it's a different dynamic of the people that are in there in the morning. And we normally, so our class for the first few months was the same people every single time that we're going in. It was always the same team. And so you start to get to know people. You start to, you know, joke with them because you're all in there. It's early in the morning. I don't have coffee before I go. So I literally wake up, go to the bathroom.
It's a semi-conscious state.
100%. And, you know, you're doing different classes. So sometimes there are reformer classes to where you're just doing like the reformer flow. And then sometimes there's a jump board. So it's more cardio. But you start to get to know the people in class. You start to, you know, have little conversations here or there. And so after going for a while, and it's not like there's different groups. So you have different people that get, because whoever you're sitting next to, that's who you talk to, you know, across the aisle. And so I started talking and we started kind of knowing people in the class. And I don't remember how I got to know Ellie at first. I don't really remember what was said about her.
In the same class with you?
Yes. Okay. So we were in the same class. They go different times. So I typically see her, but super kind. And so I forget what like prompted my interest. I think someone may have brought up her Instagram or something like that and started looking. And I was like, oh my gosh, she'd be a fabulous
Maybe girl. She had a nice aura around her.
She definitely does have that, a very nice aura around her. She's incredible. And I know a little bit about her story because we researched it and looked into her and she wrote a book.
I don't know anything about her.
So should we just let her in?
Of course. Okay. She's out here. I got the beep beep.
I actually don't know if she will recognize because normally when she sees me, my hair is up in a bun. I'm half awake. You know, there she is. Hi, Ellie.
Hello, Ellie.
Hello.
I'm not sure if you're going to recognize me because my hair is down. I'm not in a bun. I'm wearing clothes. That sounds weird.
I kind of look the same, don't I?
Oh, you look gorgeous. Listen,
how was the food in the M&Ms in our green room?
Oh, delicious.
Thank you.
Well, meet my dad. We were just talking about, this is Dan. Yeah, that's Ellie. We were just talking about how I know you, and I was saying that it's an interesting cult we're part of. It's the people that go at the 6 a.m. class. You go at 5:30 though in some mornings, don't you?
Yeah, I always do the first class.
Oh
Are these
yeah.
called Pilates pals or Pilates insomniacs?
Yeah. I would go at like 4 in the morning when I'm up. I should start thinking about that. But so good to see you twice in one day.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And I love, so you just said you always go to the first class. Tell us, we'll start there. Why is that the class that you always have to go to?
Well, I don't have to, but I also have a horse, and so I like to ride my horse, and he needs to be fed at a certain time. So I either have to do Pilates after or before the horse. So the
Gotcha.
horse is kind of first. And if I do it too late, if I do Pilates after, then it kind of eats into, it's just most productive if I just, what do they say, eat the frog first, right? So
Yeah. I love
So is it
that.
just feeding him or also riding him?
Yeah, sometimes I ride, sometimes I don't have time to ride, so I just feed him. Yeah.
I love
And
that.
if I have time, then I like to walk over. So walking there, walking back. So yeah. Now that it's getting lighter, I'll do more of that. When it was darker in the morning, it makes it really hard because I can't get my walk in unless I want to walk in the dark, which I don't. So
Can I ask you a city dweller question?
a city dweller question, yeah.
I'm the city dweller.
Yeah.
What do you feed a horse?
Well, I feed him hay and then also pellets, which is hay and a pellet. And then that's, so it's a bucket. You put that in a bucket with vitamins. So,
They're total vegetarians.
yeah.
And he drinks from a trough, I
I'm
suppose.
pretty sure they're vegan too.
Oh.
And you drink some of the trough, I suppose, or a little.
Yeah.
You ever use any feed bags you see in all those commercials? A little bag.
No, he
And
doesn't need a feed bag. No.
one last question is a city dweller.
I never know what he's gonna come up with. Sorry.
Do they sleep standing up?
They do both. They sleep standing up and then they usually lay down about 45 minutes a day.
Funny, so
Yeah, right. More
do
like 4 to 5 hours a day.
Okay.
That's so cool. Okay, so did you get your questions out, City
There
Dweller?
are more formulating, but yes, for the time being, I'm satisfied.
I feel like you should make the next City Slicker that's happening. Like, in you should recreate it. I feel like you and Billy Crystal could have a good chat.
Please, we have wonderful
Okay,
guests
anyway,
there,
sorry.
please.
So, Ellie, we'll start this way. What is your number today on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 being a day where you should not have even gotten out of bed to go to Pilates today, to a 10 where it's the best day you've ever lived. You can't imagine an even better day.
Oh, I don't know, 7 or 8.
Okay. What would it take for your number between 7 or 8 to go to 0.25 higher today? What would it have to take?
News that I sold a painting, and been able to ride my horse this morning.
Nice transition.
Oh, I like it.
Paintings, you say?
Yes. Well, I know about you. My dad is like, I try not to tell him too much because he just likes to dive in. But what I think it's really cool is that you have a very unique story, and I think it is, and very fascinating story too, because you got your way into the artistic world because you that's where you thrive. But let's take a step back. You talked about selling a painting. Let's take a step back to where it started for you, because people may not know who you are. They may not know what you do. They might live under a rock, whatever. But so you are an artist, but how did you navigate to that? Like, what's your, let's take a step back and kind of talk about that.
Like, how did I become an artist?
Yes.
So, I was 15 years old. I was in high school, and my parents are like very, my dad's Greek. So that means you go to college, and for women, you marry an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, and stay home and cook, clean the house, and have babies. And for my brother, it means like go be a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer. So my brother was going to Boston University. He's a couple years older than me. Oh, is that where you went? Oh, wow. And so it's not a cheap school. And so anyway, he was going there he was majoring in English, to become a lawyer. And so I started to think about my future and like, what do I really want to do with my life? And I was sort of good at a lot of things. I was a very good student, very academic, but I wasn't great at anything. And I just had this desire to be like great at something rather than good at a lot of things. And it was like the first time in my life that I had any sort of spiritual consciousness. I don't know how, but I kind of grew up in a like, I wouldn't say they were atheist, like they weren't against God, but it was just like a vacuum of no consciousness of God or spirituality. So for the first time in my life at 15, I started to think about that. And so I don't know, I asked God for a talent. I was like, if you make me talented and great at something, like I'll do it with all my heart kind of idea. And so that week, or like shortly thereafter in my art class, they had Betty Edwards. Do you know who she is? Betty Edwards?
No.
She's really well known, but at the time she was less known. She wrote the book, Drawing from the Right Side of the Brain, and it's basically how to engage and activate your right brain. And so she took us through all these right brain exercises, and she did this workshop as a visiting artist. And like
In high
somehow,
school, this is high school this happened.
yeah.
That's
So
pretty quick.
somehow, yeah, like immediately, like my right brain just turned on and I could draw. And but before that, I wasn't really artistically inclined. I really couldn't draw. I wasn't like an artsy kid. It happened at 15. And so then I went home and I showed my mom my drawings, and she didn't believe me. And she was like, "You didn't draw that. That one of your friends drew that. Stop lying." So she gave me a picture that out of the newspaper of this like composer, and she said, "Okay, if you did these drawings, go draw this for me in your room." So I went and I drew it and brought it back to her, and then she was all shocked. So I
Wow.
started to feel like I had something.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
Where was that?
then,
Where were you? Where did you grow up?
in Hawaii.
Oh, really? What island?
Yeah. Oahu.
Okay, got it. So you're in Hawaii, you're going to high school there. Okay, got it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So then this is like the real part of the cool part of the story. So after this, I had all these study halls and I was tired of just going to study halls. So I asked if I could convert some of them to an art class, like an independent study. They said yes. So I just went into the art room, and the art teacher, who is a ceramicist, so she didn't know much about painting, she's like, "I can't really help you with painting, but here's the supply closet. Go for it. Just have
I
fun."
got it, true.
Yeah,
Sure.
so I started on this big canvas and I just started painting. I painted these two ladies. And you know, looking back, if you look on my YouTube channel, I recreated my first painting. So you can kind of see what it was like at 15 and what it's like now. So
You did
that's
that
kind of,
recently, didn't you? Did you do that
yeah, I did
recently?
that. Yeah, I
Sorry.
did that recently. So the first painting is basically these two floating egghead ladies. But at the time I thought it was good and I was really proud of it. And so I thought, okay, I'll give it to my dad for his birthday. So I hid it in my closet for a few weeks, and then on his birthday, he was coming home from work, and I heard him like going up the steps. And my dad is like one of these people that like can make you or break you with his words. Like he can say, "Wow, I'm so proud of you," and you're like, "Oh, you know, beaming." Or like, "That's
Terrible.
terrible. You should never do that again. You know, find something else." And I would be crushed. So I was super nervous to give it to him. And so he came up, and I had the painting, and I turned it around and showed it to him, and his jaw just dropped, and he was just like amazed. And even though he's like super macho and this Greek dad, he started to tear up and get emotional. And he got super embarrassed and just grabbed the painting and ran up to his room. And I thought, "Oh my gosh." And so I started crying, and I just threw myself on my pillow and just bawled my eyes out. And I just thought, if I can make my macho Greek dad cry, like I want to do that for the rest of my life. Like I didn't, that's when I realized how impactful art is and
Wow.
how deeply it affects people. And I guess I was attracted to that power, honestly. If I'm real honest, it felt like a way,
Superpower.
yeah, it felt like a way to impact people's lives with something really amazing and powerful. So I was completely hooked. So from that moment on, I was going to be an artist. And then my dad like super validated the idea, and it fit into his paradigm, because it's like, okay, now I can be a wife, a mom of a doctor, lawyer, and engineer, and play with my colors, you know? And So he's totally supported it and like got me all kinds of paint and like, you know, was like super proud of me to be an artist. And yeah, it worked. My brother, no way. No way could he be an artist, but
So
I.
once that door opened for you, you walked in and really never turned back.
But yeah.
Wow.
Wow. So you're in high school though, like 15. I mean, there's high school, there's so many other things going on. But so tell us a little about what came next. So you do this painting, your dad's like, that's amazing. You're like, yes, this is what I have to do. You know, most kids in high school are like, I want to play, I want to go out, you know, I want to go surfing in Hawaii, or you know, I want to do whatever it is. What happened after that?
No, I was pretty normal. I mean, I was kind of burning the candle at both ends in a way. You know, I was definitely like a party girl and did all, you know, but I painted. I loved my art classes. You know, in the summers, I would take other art classes. And then I applied to art school. So I applied to Savannah College of Art and Design. They were giving away these like phony scholarships at the time. They would like jack up, they still do it. They jack up their price and then give you a scholarship. So, and then my dad's like, my daughter is a scholarship. So, but basically it's just like a coupon code.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I went to SCAD and then, and
That
I
must have
met.
been in itself a big change for you from going from the island to the mainland and changing and being, I mean, that's far, it's pretty far from home.
Yeah, and Georgia, Savannah, Georgia, especially then, was very, very different. And yeah, and like ho both places had tons of racism. So in Hawaii, it was not good to be white. And then in Savannah, it was the other way around, you know, and it was like you saw the other side of racism where, you know, the white people were racist. So it was, yeah, so both they had that in common where you had to like, watch yourself. Yeah, and then we transferred. So John, my husband, I met in high school. So we were like high school
I
sweethearts.
just met him this morning, actually. And
For subject material, were you more drawn to drawing people or landscapes or scenery or objects? Was there any leaning towards anything in that area?
I think because I was like young portraits, like you always want to paint, like I think young people always want to paint portraits and like eyeballs and like, you know, the goofy, edgy stuff. Surrealism. I was like attracted to like, let's see how weird we can make this sort of idea. And yeah, so that was mostly the themes. And then in art school, you know, it was more about.
Structural, sure.
Yeah, more academic things, you know, like a still life with eggs, you know, that kind of stuff.
So you met John in high school and then you left for art school, and did he stay
No,
there?
he came. No, he went to Savannah College of Art and Design as well, and then we both transferred to University of Georgia. My dad pressured me to transfer to University of Georgia because he didn't want me to marry John. Being an artist, he wanted me to go to a university and meet a. I think he
Dr.
just started to
Anthony
think about it. Yeah, he's like,
a normal person.
a real, what's normal?
That's where the doctor, lawyers, and engineers are. So he was hoping I would meet somebody there, and I think in his mind, a bigger pool would give me like I wouldn't want John anymore or something like that. So, I mean, it didn't work, obviously, but. That was his goal. So we both transferred to University of Georgia, and you know, that's where we graduated. And within a year, I started working as an artist. I got a job as a studio artist for a company in Atlanta, and I went to a studio and I painted all day for the decor market. And John got hired at a similar company in Atlanta, like their competitor. So, yeah, so that's we really got our start in art like right away after college.
He was a painter also, yes.
Yep.
That's amazing. And so did you even you come home for dinner, did you talk about it? Because your competitors, were you like, hey, what are you working on? What are you working on?
Yeah, kind of. And they knew like my company wasn't as savvy. So his company was very like secretive about their designs and whatnot. So they didn't like I actually interviewed there to get a job there. and it was ran by five brothers from Iran, and they asked me all these questions, and I answered them like the way they asked, but he point blank in the interview told me that I was too opinionated and too strong for them, and
Damn.
like I wouldn't, yeah, I wasn't their cup of tea. They wanted very like pushovers to work for them. And so I told John, I'm like, hey, they are looking for pushovers. So if you go and interview and act like you're a big pushover and anything goes, and you're just like a laid back artist, if you play that vibe, they'll hire you on the spot. And they did.
And is he not like that at all? And he just was faking it, or is he like that?
No, he's kind of like that,
Or were they looking for just for more men rather than women based upon their
Well,
background?
they definitely didn't like strong women at all.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, but they just wanted artists to kind of like take advantage of and not really like nobody that's going to really stand up for themselves. And John got hired as an assistant, which was good because all the artists that had their name on the products, like basically, if you quit, you almost couldn't make your own art anymore. Like they were very, it was awful. So John was really lucky that he just was an assistant. So he basically made other people's art under other people's names.
Oh, wow. So
Yeah.
how long do you do that for before you change from
It
that?
was just a year. We both just worked for a year. The commute was brutal. We had, 76 miles in one direction, in Atlanta traffic. It was terrible. So after that, we freelance. So then we just went on our own and built our own art businesses.
Pretty gutsy, very gutsy.
Yeah, we connected with an art rep that sold our art for us, and then we worked also with a dealer. Yeah, and we were really lucky because John and I both basically sold our work to the same places and did equally well. And we never really competed because there wasn't one of us that did particularly better than the other. Like sometimes he would sell more, sometimes I would sell more,
Yeah.
And it's not unusual for two artists to marry each other. It's
It's
rather
not.
common, isn't it? Yeah, it's rather common. Well, it's because your brain works in a different way than the average person. So the person not in art, it can be more of a conflict.
You're a psychologist
Yeah,
now?
exactly.
From
I have a degree in that.
BU. He's got a psychology degree from BU. He paid a lot of money for that.
Someone did.
He got a scholarship. All right.
Code.
There, yeah, coupon code. And then you wrote a book. Is that correct? So
Yeah.
how that came to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked writing. Just even in high school, I liked writing, but I never like thought about writing a book, or it wasn't just on the radar. But I feel like I caught it, like almost like a virus. Like I caught it from this lady. So in our school, the that we had in Arizona, we've now relocated here, but we used to be located in Arizona. And I used to teach just all kinds of classes. So we had this youth class that was going on. I wasn't teaching that one, but the kids were there. And this was a mom of one of the kids. And we were walking, and just in passing, we started talking. And I was finding out about her, and she told me she was a writer. And I was like, oh, that's so fascinating. Like, so I was just asking her questions about her job. And she told me that she had she fully makes a living as a writer, and she had published like 17 books, and they were all like sexy vampire romance novel style, right? So she hit this genre and knew the formula, and she was telling me about the formula, and she knows exactly how much she's going to make every book. She's like, she has the whole thing down to a science, and it's like a real vocation. And I just thought the whole thing was so fascinating. And I was asking her about her editing process, just her whole creative process. And I didn't like come away from that going, oh, I'm gonna write a book. But it was like 3 nights later, it was 4th of July, and out of the blue, I had some friends over, we were watching fireworks, and it was around, it hit me like at like 8:30 at night, just before the fireworks were gonna go off. All of a sudden, I just had this like huge desire to write, but like to it was bizarre. It's never hit me like that. It was stronger than just, oh, I need to write. It was like from my gut, like from my belly, I could just feel like something bad would happen. Like I would break in two, or I'd explode, or I felt like something would happen if I didn't get this out of me. Like it felt like I had to write.
That'd be
And
a
I was,
book by itself. Are you kidding?
yeah, and I felt like I was getting like antsy and
Sure.
like really agitated, and I just wanted these people to leave so I could just write. And so finally, like at 10 o'clock at night, they leave, and I get my laptop out, and I started to write like a synopsis of a, if I were to write a book, what would it be about? And that was trash. I didn't even actually write that. So then it didn't go away. So I thought, okay, what are stories worth telling from my life? And I just made a list of stories worth telling. And I wrote down 12 stories or events that happened, and I could see a thread. And basically the thread was that this isn't necessarily what the book's about, but this is how it began. The thread that I saw was that I'm like hope, like super hopelessly romantic. And I get these ideas, and the idea in my head is so much better than reality and what actually happens. So every time I do something, I'm super disappointed because it never
It's
happens
not
the
to be
way I
true.
imagined. And
Yeah.
so I get done with the whatever. So let's say it's, I don't know, whatever, L this art show. I'm going to put on this art show. And I put my whole heart into it. And then the outcome is like way different than I imagined. It's like too optimistic or too romantic. And that seemed to be the theme of all these stories. And so I just, then, so I was able to sleep that night, but then the next morning I just woke up and started writing, and I wrote for basically 17 days and finished it,
Wow.
and like all at once. And but it really wasn't a book. It was just kind of a run-on sentence of Ellie trying something and failing. That was my story. And I was like, nobody's gonna read that. That's so depressing. That's so ir you know, like after a while you're like, okay, let me guess, she's gonna fail. So I was like, that's not a book. So I was stuck for a while, and then I started studying archetypal journeys, and then I found the hero's journey, and I was like, oh, this is the hero's journey. So then I recrafted it to fit that, so it actually arced and like did the stuff it was supposed to do, and rewrote it. Anyway, rewrote it a bunch of times, and so now we have Unemployable, and it's basically a book for anyone who has a dream, and that if you just commit to your dream and really push through all the obstacles, you know, the hero's journey, you'll come through with the elixir for others, and you know.
Was there something traumatic that happened in 2008 for you?
Yeah, how do you what how do you know that?
I do my research. Do you care to, because I feel like that could be a thing in itself that kind of guided you forward from that point as well.
Yeah, in two, well, we lost everything in 2008. So what we were working with a dealer at the time, an art dealer, and so all our eggs were in that one basket. And we were trying to kind of, we were on this like perpetual motion machine where in order to, like, we were selling over 80 paintings a month to this guy.
That's huge.
And yeah, so like lots and lots of work. And so we were addicted to the money that brought in, and we were like broke at a high level because, you know, we used all the money we made. We weren't smart. That's the point. We just were not smart. All our eggs were in one basket. We were making like really, really good income, but we spent it all. And
And
we
you had a
had,
family that time, right? Because you have four, do you have four kids? Is that right?
yeah, we have four kids in private school. We had all these vehicles, a big house. Everything's, you know, leveraged. Like we own nothing cash. And we have bills, you know. And so we didn't like, we had some money saved, but we didn't have enough of a plan to be able to get out of this like perpetual motion machine. And there was such a draw on our work that whatever we painted was already sold before we finished it. So you don't want to lose that draw, right? Because you have all this demand. So anyway, we couldn't figure out how to get out of it. But 2008 happened, so we got out of it. That's what rescued us. So it was terrible and traumatic, but it ended up saving us and putting us in our true destiny. So anyway, he called in May and said, "Hey, things are kind of slowing down. I'm going to start buying about half as much work from you." And we were like, "Okay, we'll have to like shrink back this, shrink back that, not eat out as much, but we can make it." And then we thought, "Okay, now we have half our time back. This is our move to move, get a more sensible business together." So we started creating all kinds of inventory. And we had planned to we hired somebody that was going to be like an assistant to help us get our artwork into galleries that we had personal relationship with versus through a dealer. And we kind of knew his territory, so we were trying to find other areas. And so that all got together. And then in September, the girl that we hired, her first day on the job, we get a call from him, and he's like, "I don't know what's happened, but all things have stopped. There's no money, there's no sales, and I can't buy anything from you guys, and I don't know when I will." So we tell the lady like what happened, and I'm like, "Okay, we need to hustle, like tent shows, art shows, get us into anything and everything you can find." So we just started doing that, and then in October that year of 08, the stock market crashed. And we know what happened, right? Like all the bubble burst, and our house value started to go down. We're upside down on our house. All the things that everybody went through. Plus, we bought at the peak because we had sold one house, bought this other. So we were,
This is in Arizona. This was in Arizona.
yeah. So we were upside down on our house by like 250,000 or something like that. We put a really nice down payment on it, but it just vaporized, And so I started to wise up about money at that point. And I was watching all the documentaries, I was reading, I was, getting a bit red-pilled about things, and understanding. I didn't know what the Federal Reserve was. I didn't know how debt they leveraged. I didn't know any of that stuff. And I started learning about money and realizing like how stupid we've been and whatever. So yeah, we ended up losing our house, all our vehicles. We lost everything. Our credit score was terrible. We had creditors, court cases. I mean, like if you go from that level of debt and expense to nothing, there's a lot of people that want their money back, so, or their things. So yeah, we like pretty much lost everything, and we were completely unemployable. So
Back to the title of the book, maybe.
yeah, because like I tried to get a job, and neither one of us could get a job because there was so many people in line before us that had a work history. They n knew the name of their previous boss. They had phone numbers to call. It's like, I've been self-employed for 15 years. How am I have no work history. So, and then it's not like I was self-employed as an accountant or something. I was self-employed as an artist. Like nobody's gonna hire you. So
So how do you bounce back from that? And then listen, in 2008, you weren't alone. Probably felt like you were very alone, but there are many, many people.
oh yeah, all my friends were totally,
We
all
were
my
both in the real
friends
estate
were.
industry at that time. So knowing, and here in Florida, so
Yeah.
knowing what the market, went from it, there were many people in that situation. So obviously you found your way back and bounced back. And I think your school started after that. Is that right?
Yeah, the school, well, we bounced. It was good because during that time, we really did hustle and we got our artwork in lots of different galleries. Artwork wasn't selling a lot, but it would sell. And that's how we were able to eat. And it just, we couldn't sell enough to maintain our lifestyle because we needed like 12 or 15,000 a month. And that was just not, we were making more like 3 or 4,000 a month. And so, and we were already so far behind on an upside down house, even if we could afford the mortgage at some point, we were like, that's stupid because we'll never get back on track. And we might as well let it go, you know? And so, I mean, we went through all the hoops that you go through at that point, you know, of like trying to do a short sale. We actually did a short sale. Anyway, that's a whole nother story, but the bank double crossed us, blah, blah, blah. But,
We've both done short sales, right?
we've had
I've done one. I had to do it then
several
too.
double crosses by the
Yeah.
banks.
Yeah, those banks.
Yeah, we had signed contracts of the short sale and everything, but there was an amendment to the real estate contract, because they wanted like the bank wanted 10 more thousand, and so they purposely put an amendment in there, and we all signed the amendment. But there's some loophole that they don't have to accept an amended contract, even though they're the ones that put the amendment. So that's how they were able to go around our back and sell it on the foreclosure market, to wipe out the second mortgage. So yeah, we got foreclosed on, even though we tried our best to do all the things you're supposed to do. And
Oh, you
yeah.
have four kids. Four, is it four boys? Is there, am I remembering that? I
Oh, I
remember
have three girls and a boy.
three
Yeah.
girls. Three girls, a boy. So they're at what? In 2008, they're what ages when this all happens?
Well, my son was born in 2005, so 3, 5, 7, 9.
Wow, I was a shopping store. 579. Anyway,
That's a pressure cooker.
but yeah. So,
Mentally,
what do? You're foreclosing your house. Where do you go? Like, how do you bounce back from that? And I think it's. I love this part of your story too, because there's people right now who could be suffering through that. You know, there's a lot of things happening. So what did you do at that time with four kids under the age of nine? How did you get back on track?
yeah, it was a bit of a pickle because you can't really rent in that situation. And the renting market was like insane because everybody was losing their houses. Everybody. So the ones with jobs could get the renting, could rent. But without a job, and you're an artist, like nobody would rent to us. So it was like, man, we're gonna have to live with my parents or be homeless, you know? So my mom and dad had extra money, and they were doing well, and so they were like, well, we want to invest in real estate because real estate's crashed and now's a good time to buy, so how about we buy a house and then you pay us rent. So I was like, great, okay. So that was the plan. So we went looking. They had like specific criteria. It had to be like a house that was like under 150,000, and she wanted land because she felt like if this bubble bursts again, or the bubble, how do you know what a house? She didn't want it in a neighborhood. So that was like a double wide on an acre kind of situation, you know? And I had this like beautiful, really nice house. But at this point, I had like lost everything. Like, I didn't care at this point. It was painful, and I felt like, oh, I have no credit score, my name is mud, and like at this time, like my house was a part of my identity, and
Sure.
the fact that I had these nice cars and whatever. And it got to the point where, I was a friend who had food stamps was buying me groceries, you know what I mean? And another friend, because I was too proud to go to the food pantry, and that was beneath me. I had friends, bring me food from the food pantry. Like it was crazy. So like living in a double wide on an acre, paying my parents' rent was where I was at. It was definitely bottom of the barrel, and at least for me. But that was what we were looking at. So we tried on like 12 different houses to buy it, and every single one freakishly like didn't work out for whatever reason, just weird things. And we had pretty much exhausted the market, and there was like nothing. And our date to be out of the house was like 2 months away. And most of the houses for sale were short sales, which take a lot longer to close on. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to live with my parents. Anyway, so finally I just decided, like one day I was like, I'm just gonna look at houses that are like 600 and, above 600,000. And so I put the threshold at like 600,000 and higher. And this house came up. That and at the time, you know, this is many years ago in Arizona, that was like what you would have like today is like a 2.5 million. You know, it was like a,
Yeah, that's
that
a
was
lot.
like an expensive house back then.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at these house prices and like my house, and I'm thinking, what the heck happened? You know, like
Yeah.
it's crazy how expensive houses are. But anyway, so it was this $650,000 house, which to us might as well have been like a mansion, and it was so out of reach. But I saw that it was two houses on one property, and they joined almost like a duplex, but a beautiful house, and it all ended up at this like pool and backyard and outdoor kitchen and all this stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is what my dad has been talking about my whole life, the family compound. You know, it's like every Greek man's dream is that his whole family lives on a compound one day. And so I was like, oh my gosh, it's the family compound. So I thought, well, if my parents sell their house and they buy this one, then we could both live in a place that's better than, you know. So I proposed it, and we went and looked at it, and they bought it, and they got it for it was a short sale, and they bought it for like 400,000.
Wow.
Is crazy. And it was like this really beautiful house. So it was on acreage, and it had a big multi-purpose building on it, and it was like this 2,000 square foot building. It had two buildings on it. And so
Studio.
yeah, so I was like, oh, dream studio. But it needed finishing. It was just like a tin shed, basically. It was like a big metal building, but it wasn't finished out. So that's how the school really came about, because I was looking at it as my studio. But I kept praying and asking God for the money, but it never came. So I thought, okay, for like 4 months I've been asking for this money, and obviously you don't want to give it to me. So how about you tell me what you are going to do, and I'll just pray that, like whatever that is. And I heard right away, I'm ready to give you your art school. And I was like, what? But I don't even want an art school. I don't know how to teach. I've never taught. I don't. Like, it was so far out of my template that I was just in shock. And so I was like, okay, well then, you know, okay, give me my art school, sure. And so then I kind of just forgot about it. I told John the story, and I was like, yeah, this weird thing happened, but I don't know, I probably made it up. You know how stuff like that goes. So then, is this getting too long and boring? I don't know, but
Oh, fascinated. Keep going.
okay. So then, like I don't know, like maybe a week later, I had a mentor at the time, this lady Beverly, and she called me up, and she's like, "Hey, I have to go to Ukraine, and I don't want to go by myself. Will you go with me?" And I'm like, "Well, what am I going to do in Ukraine?" She goes, "Well, I can hook you up with this school." She doesn't know anything about the art school. Only person I told was John. She goes, "I can hook you up with this school, the university there. And I think you can volunteer teach art classes if you want." And I was like, that's weird. Okay. And I said, I don't know, how much do I have to pay for the plane ticket? She goes, yeah, all you have to do is pay for the plane ticket. She goes, everything else is covered, but you got to pay for your plane ticket. And I'm like, well, how much is that? She says $1,400. And I was like, if I use $1,400 to go with you to Ukraine, I'm like, John will kill me, because that is literally food money. Like, I can't take my kids' food money. I don't
Yeah.
have it. And so I said, but look, if $1,400 falls out of the sky today, I will go to Ukraine with you. So I go to my mailbox, and in there is a letter from Haven Gallery. Okay. And it's this gallery I forgot all about. That we were in Austin, Texas. And I think our artwork was in there for more than a year, and nothing ever sold. And I completely forgot about it. And I open up the check, and it's a check for $1,400.
Shut up.
I am not kidding you.
That is crazy.
Totally crazy. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to Ukraine. So I go to Ukraine,
Oh.
and I teach the art classes. I ended up actually going to Ukraine for the next like 8 or 10 years, like twice a year. So that opened up a whole new door. But when I on my way back from Ukraine, my mom picked me up at the airport, and she says, well, she goes, you know how you've been wanting money for I kept asking for 25,000. That's what I thought it would cost to finish out the studio. So she goes, "You know how you've been wanting 25,000 for your studio?" And I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "Well, while you were gone, this super weird thing happened. It's kind of a long story, but basically, it's like an inheritance. I got this from my grandmother." And she says it's $26,000. So not 25, 26. And I was like, "What? That's crazy." So I realized I could connect the dots that, okay, it's supposed to be an art school. I get invited to go to Ukraine. This weird miracle happens where I get the money to go to Ukraine. I teach at this university for the first time in my life. And now I have $26,000 that literally fell out of the sky. So we finish out, that was like October. We spent that next month building that out and finished the studio, and then I opened the school that January, and that's how we started the school.
A story.
So wow. That was
yeah.
what year did you open the school?
2010.
Wow. That is, I mean, I feel like I need to rub on you next time I see you. You're like a lucky person. I'll be like, "Oh my gosh, come here. Hi, good to see you." That's so incredible. So then you are in Arizona. Where in Arizona were you at the school? Where was that at?
Queen Creek.
Where's
So
that?
it's kind of near Phoenix. It's a suburb of Phoenix.
Okay. So you're there for, I mean, quite some time, because how long have you been here now in the Lakewood Ranch area?
2 years. So we left Phoenix in 2020 and moved to Georgia for 3 years. And that wasn't it. That was just, I think, a little like transitionary
Sure.
time. And as you know, COVID broke out. So we moved to Lakewood Ranch area in 2023.
Got it. And so your school that you had that you opened up there, it was obviously a success as you still have it now, but it's just transitioned into a different format. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually kind of come full circle. So it was physical only from 2010 until 2018. And then in 2018, we brought our program online. So then we were teaching in person and online.
Oh,
And what,
before COVID, so you like almost were prepared. Wow, incredible. That's insightful.
yeah, we went online in 2018. So we were fully up and running and going by 2020. And then we moved to Georgia because we needed more land and a bigger space. So that 2,000 square foot building wasn't big enough. So we saw this, we bought this place in Georgia that was 64 acres and just the school building. So they had a 10,000 square foot house and then and what we were doing at the time is people were kind of coming from different parts of the world to learn from us, and we needed like housing for them. So that big house had like just you could put a lot of people in it, and then we were thinking we would build on the property like a dorm or something like that. And then when COVID happened, like obviously all those plans disappeared because we even had people signed up for that year to start in that September. And we had to give them all their money, but give everybody their money back and cancel all the classes that were in person. But we had the online that was going, and so basically we pivoted. We had this property that was set up for all this physical art classes, and after 2 years of not being able to do it, we just basically were like, ugh, let's just do online only. And so we sold that, moved down here, and now we just bought a warehouse and on Fruitville Road that we're going to start doing in-person classes again. So it's kind of come a little bit full circle. I mean, we'll always do the online, and that's like the main thing because it's so scalable. But we are going to also do physical classes.
Wow, incredible. And who are your typical students that you teach? Like, are
Well, our main, say avatar is, we call her Deb. She's, basically me, like 50 something, drinks wine and pets her dog, so, Her kids have gone off to college. She's an empty nester. She's looking for something. She was creative in the past. She has this art, dream, but now she's ready for like a second career or to move into something of her own. But we really get people from all ages, and we have some that just graduated high school that instead of going to art school, they go to our school. We have people in their 20s, 30s, up to 80. So it's really all, but because the way Facebook works, or it, as is because I do most of the ads and it's my face that's out there, they find somebody that looks like me to show it to. So we get a lot of people that are basically my profile.
And are your four kids as artistic as the two of you are, or did it go skip a gene? Like,
No, they're all artists. And Demetra, my oldest daughter, is probably, she's more successful than we are at this point. Like she's really good. She has like 250,000 followers on Instagram.
wow.
She's like, yeah, and she helps teach at the school. So we both teach classes, and her husband Jake is my business partner. So me and my husband and my daughter and her husband, we run the businesses. So
That's incredible.
yeah.
Wow. I
And
mean,
then
that
my son works for us, and he's only 19, but he's about to go to school in Florence and learn some art techniques there, that are real like old school classical. And he works in like customer service, sales, some social media type stuff. And then my daughter, Daphne, my second oldest, she runs our whole retreat and experience division. So we do like art retreats, and she'll be running like the in-person classes. So she works for us as well. But the only one that doesn't work for us is my third daughter. And so she is a tattoo artist, and she's living in New Jersey near New York. So,
Oh,
but
what a
still like in
group. an art. That's incredible. And were you
Thanks.
just had a retreat, right? Was that your retreat that you were away for, the one that you put on?
Yeah, that, well, yeah. I mean, my daughter's technically in charge of it, but I was there as like the one of the teachers. And yeah, so that was in Mexico. I go on some of the retreats. So.
Your story is unbelievable, literally unbelievable. I mean, it's like the rising of the phoenix. You have like this incredible success. You don't know what you want to do. You pray for it. It falls in your lap. I mean, it seems like a lot of things are falling in your lap when you pray for them. So my next obvious question would be, what are you praying for these days? Like, what can we help bring into your world? What is your ask right now?
Yeah, that is a good question. Well, I have like goals and dreams, but I guess it so where we're headed or what we want to do now is my big dream. I got this vision when I was 19. So this is what my whole life is working towards. And I don't have it yet. So, I guess that would be the answer is I want to build an artist community. So basically land development. So I want to buy about 1,000 acres and create sort of an agriculture, farm to table type food businesses. Nothing I would do. I would just, lease those out. And then a housing development where artists, so we design houses for artists. And for them to showcase their artwork. So maybe instead of the garage, it's a studio gallery area. So you could walk down the street and literally see windows of art and gallery, like go gallery after gallery. And so we would sell the houses to the artists. We would have big like community centers. So basically a housing development for artists, with lots and lots of like water features and food and farming and like all the stuff. So
Our art village, so to speak.
a what?
Arts village.
A
Like
arts village. Yes.
that would be amazing. I think that is so incredible. And how cool that you get to work with your family while you're doing it, you know, while you're getting to grow this business. They've got a love for what you have as well too, and that it just seems like it's a family affair. And I love that. I think that's I don't think you're I did not know what we were gonna get into. I did a little research before we chatted, and I think that one question just got us really to I'm just amazed. I'm speechless.
Do you envision probably doing this in Florida?
Yeah, I love Florida. I would love to do it like right here. There is 1,000 acres. I don't know if it's still for sale, but it's kind of a little bit out towards Mallorca, and it's high and dry and it looks pretty perfect. I don't know if it's still for sale, but I'm not currently in position to be able to buy it, but it's just 28 million, that's all. So
In all fairness, have you asked?
I need to ask for
Okay,
28 million.
okay.
You're
Ask for it
right.
to fall out of the
Yeah,
sky.
you're
Yeah.
right.
And then go buy a lottery ticket.
I feel like, I think it's like such a big dream and I've had it for so long. I feel like I'm not quite ready is probably it. So like, there's that like slight fear of success kind of going on where like, I don't know. So maybe that's why I haven't really asked.
Sorry.
But I know we're headed there. I don't know.
Well, today
So
you put it out there again, so who knows? You put things out there and things can happen.
yeah.
I mean, I think that your story is such an incredible story of resilience and creativity and transformation and love and failure. And also, I love that you ask for what you want. And you're asking for you're asking to God, you're putting out there in the universe. I truly believe in that what you put out there, you get. Everything as simple as pulling in and asking for the parking spot in the front to a $26,000 check or a $1,400 check that shows up in your mailbox. I mean, that's just an amazing inspiration for other people to understand that you can get the things, maybe not the $1,400 check, but who knows? Maybe you could. If you put it out there and you come from a place of love and wanting to do exactly what you're passionate about, I just think that's incredible. Where can people go to find your artwork today? Where's the best place for them to go shopping around and seeing where your artwork is today?
Well, we own a gallery that's in downtown Sarasota on Palm Avenue. It's called Milan Art Gallery. And so there I have a website, Ellie Milan. If anybody's interested in art classes, then Milan Art Institute. And so yeah, those are all the places that you can find us. You can see my husband's art, my daughter's art. They're all at the gallery, plus other artists that we represent. So we have events all the time.
Do you and your husband, did you and John ever do a piece together? I've seen you have some funny videos where you're talking, you've got some good banter. But now that you were competitors at one time, now you're kind of doing your own things. But have you ever created any kind of art together?
Yeah, we have a whole career of that. So we for most of our career, we collaborated and we painted on the same piece together. So that started in 2000 and 2003, 2004. And yeah, that's about when we started collaborating. And then we made a whole career of that up until really recently. I think about 5 years ago, we started developing our own look or our own voice. So our voice was kind of together. And then since then, he does his artwork, I do mine. We still collaborate though. So we have our collaborative pieces, and then he has his work, and I have my work, and they're three different styles. So
I feel like if you're not already offering it, you could offer a couples art class in therapy.
yeah.
Like getting people to like, because that's cause what you were saying earlier, like when you're doing that and you're working on one piece together, is one of you, no, we should do it this way. No, we should do it that way. Knowing that you're a very strong voice person, as you mentioned earlier, maybe he's a little bit more laid back. There's that dynamic of trying to figure out this is a piece of art. So how do you decide whose idea is going to
Yeah.
win? Great
Well,
therapy.
we've thought about that because like to how we've had to collaborate that's made it work is you have to care more about the whole or the result
Peace. Sure.
bigger, more than the parts. So like if my ego is attached to this thing I did, but it doesn't honestly make the whole piece better, I just want this little part, then it doesn't work. So you have to like let those precious things kind of die to have, the big piece, the overall piece look better. And I think that's like a tremendous message for marriage, because it's kind of what you have to do, right? You have to, see the value in what you can do together,
Yeah.
for the family over like what do I on my own, can do or want. So
Well, and you have four of the greatest canvases you'll probably ever create, right? It's your kids. You know, and like you have to work together when your parents to raise the kids and have
yeah.
that thought process there as well too. So, wow.
Ella, are your parents
Yeah.
still with us? Your parents.
Yeah, they I'm trying to get them to move out here and they're just super stubborn about it. So, in fact, I'll send this podcast to them so they can hear me say that.
What's amazing is also they live long enough to see your success, really to change their view of the world, their dynamic.
Yeah, they're getting up there. They're like 78, 79,
That's
and
not up there yet.
76.
Yeah.
We just raised the ceiling.
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah,
sure.
that's true. So I don't know. My mom just keeps saying, I'm not ready to become one of your kids yet. That's what she keeps saying. So
And is your brother still around as well?
yeah, he is in California. So I think
Engineer,
he's
doctor,
planning to come
lawyer.
down. No, he became a very successful businessman.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so he's into like solar and
I love
yeah,
that.
he's done a lot of things.
Maybe land development?
Actually, yeah, it's interesting that you say that. Yeah, he's actually that is definitely up his sleeve.
I think we know someone you can start with, right? So I would love to end just with this question, thinking about the path that you've led. Wow, an incredible journey from writing your book about your journey, and actually even just sitting down and probably just writing out those stories with the up and the down and the I thought it was gonna go this way, it didn't go this way, to going back to that young girl at 15 who didn't know what she wanted to do, and then asking if there are, girls in your same situation, or girls, boys, children, or anyone in your same situation trying to figure themselves out right now and trying to figure out how they can make their next move for what their life's gonna be. What advice would you go back and give to
Yeah, I love that question. It's what I've told my kids, especially these days. I think this is probably not what parents want to hear me say, but college is just stupid unless you want, a specific vocation where you have to have college and a license.
Agree.
It's like it is where dreams go to die. Like, don't go to college unless you want to be a nurse or you want to be a doctor or something like that where you have to. And I would just run hard after what you're passionate about, what gives you the most joy, what you love doing more than anything, and do it like really boldly, and don't think about the money, because I think money follows what you're passionate about. There's a million ways to monetize these days. And anybody that's really good at anything, and you're going to get good at something if you're committed, devoted, and passionate, can monetize it. That's just
Sure.
fact, And it's great that we live in a time period where that's true. And so I would just say, I don't know, if you're like passionate about video games, like go for that. If you're passionate about anything, helping people, designing things, painting walls, like whatever it is you
Just
really
do it
love
and try it,
doing.
sure.
Yeah, follow your heart. I love it.
Just because there's so many ways to make money at it and have a career and build a business, and I just think it's like a thing of the past for people to just do to settle into something that they, just like, well, it's a good job, it pays the bills. Like, I think those days are over. And if you like to bake cookies, man, that's your thing. Go be a cookie baker and be the best cookie baker,
What great advice. Do you ever do keynote talks, Ellie?
Yeah, I have.
I'm gonna pull on you. I'm putting together an event that I would love to, if you'd be willing. So I'll share it with you at 6 a.m. in the morning when I know you haven't had enough coffee yet. No, I'm just kidding.
Why don't you just
That
go
sounds
feed
good.
the horse for
Yeah, that would be amazing. I'll bring my that I love that. I remember I did that for your one of your friends growing up. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with us and to tell us your story. I'm more amazed than I even could imagine. So you're
any
incredible.
quick right brain exercises I can attempt?
Yeah, you if you wanna well, we have a YouTube channel that has like a whole there's a lesson on that, but there's so many things you can do. You can like just get a piece of paper out and like, look at somebody's face and without looking at your paper, sketch their face by just following your eye over the features. And it's not going to look good, but it engages your right brain. Drawing anything upside down does it. There's so many like right brain exercises, but yeah, anybody can draw, anybody can do art. It's not just for the talented, for sure.
My daughter is starting to do that. She's starting to sketch people's faces. We had a friend that was here Saturday night, and she said, "Just stand there, just sit there. I'm going to draw you." He goes, "Do I have to stand still?" And she said, "No, you don't stand still. I'm just going to draw you." And she's just sketching it out, and it's kind of
That's
cartoon
so
looking, right?
cool.
But she and it's really good. I don't know if it's in here somewhere. I'm
How
going to
old
be
is she?
9 and a half.
Wow. Well, she must be an artist then.
She's
She's
multi-talented.
incredible. She really is just gonna rule the world, hopefully one day. But that's a whole conversation another time. But I will now I'm like, oh, I'm gonna look at classes. Thank you so much. We so appreciate you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
well, thanks for
great
the
addition to
interview.
Lakewood Ranch. Thank you for moving here.
Oh, thank you. That's very sweet.
I'll see you in a class soon.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sally,
Thanks for
bye.
having me.
Of
Okay.
course, thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Wow.
I think she could be a candidate for the Shadow Academy.
Oh yeah, she's amazing. It just goes to show you that you like I knew she's amazing and I was looking at her Instagram channel and I did obviously I did a little research behind and she was like, "How did you know that?" I love when that those questions come up. Thank you, chat.
Don't give
Oh
away
yeah, oh man.
secrets.
But no, but it's she's that's it's such a amazing story about success and failure and reinvention and success and love and passion and that is resilience. Like that is the definition of resilience.
Well, another great feature of what we're doing on the podcast, people see people in their lives as the final current event. They don't see how they got to that point. Go back to we've all had the failures, we've all had the setbacks, all had the issues, all over. And they didn't ever it teaches you how to overcome some of that stuff, and it just gives you the full continuum to some degree. And she had a really crazy story.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking with Lauren, the her episode was a couple months back, and she's the travel agent. She kind of had the like their family had the bed and breakfast, and she had said, people look at her now and they're like, "Oh, you're so glamorous. You're traveling and doing these trips. You're so amazing. It must be so wonderful to be you," right? Stupid
That's
comments like
what they
that,
see.
right? They don't know the hard work that went into it and the pain and the suffering that she had to do and all the things that made her who she is. They just want to look and say, and you're right. People just look at you now and say, whether you're thinking about when people would have looked at her in the downturn, they would have looked at, oh, you're just a starving artist, right? It depends on different parts of her life. When do they look at her? But it's incredible
Well,
that
she
she's,
didn't just bounce back. She's an empire.
yeah.
I want to see some of her stuff online.
I think we're gonna do that right now.
Let's go.
Okay, I want that for my birthday.
Yeah, you know what? Here, draw your own stuff. Hold on.
Listener, thank you for joining us. And wow, what a story. If you have a story to tell, go visit us at www.jamie, Jaime, Marco, Marco.com. Let us know that you're interested in being a guest or someone you'd like to hear as a guest. So I'm sure there's some people in our Pilates class who know Ellie, but they didn't know her story.
And
That's
we will
cool.
decide if you're fascinating or not, but
Oh.
guaranteed you are.
Right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, thank you for tuning into today's What's Your Story podcast.
To learn more or share your story, go to jamiemarco.com. That's www.jaimemarco.com. And we